Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and this is the 5th of November 2012. You listen to the AR Library Call. So let's get on with our first question. We've got 8 questions, and I want to thank everybody for joining us today. We're glad you're with us, and hopefully we'll be able to get to all these questions and tell people how to go along. So the first question. My date of discovery was October 9th. A counselor I went to determined that I had moderate to severe depression, so I saw a psychiatrist to get some medication. I took a couple of antidepressants before he decided to put me on Effexor. That worked for a while, and then he changed me to Lexapro, 10 milligrams. I was still having a great deal of problem concentrating and keeping things together, so after a period of medication adjustments, we decided that I had a form of ADD, and now I'm taking Concerta ER, 36 milligrams, along with Lexapro. I also have had daily migraines since 2007. Lots of medications have made me stupid and given me kidney stones. We elected to do the Botox injections, which have been helpful, and my neurologist is now has me now taking nortriptyline 10 milligrams. I am unable to sleep for several hours, and when I finally do fall asleep, I constantly dream and talk throughout the night. After a sleep study was done, my neurologist said it was the Lexapro which was causing a lack of sleep, but my psychiatrist sees an improvement in my depression and has changed this medication. Finally, I told my psychiatrist I wanted off the Lexapro for good. We set up a plan, and as I was cutting down, the weepiness and anxiety put me in such a state that I had to go back again. Then the dose had to be upped because of further problems in my marriage. Several times I quit taking the Concerta because I was causing insomnia, but it wasn't. I quit taking them again a couple of weeks ago. Being a former elementary school teacher, I do believe that I have some form of ADD, but don't like the way it makes me feel, and I'm embarrassed about taking them. Since I've also been dealing with menopause for the past 7 years, my husband says that I should take Ambien, which is constantly advised on the radio station he listens to. He's upset because I won't even try it. I don't want to be on pills the rest of my life. Can the medications I'm taking become physically dependent? Should I get a second opinion? And which type of doctor should I see? So first off, thank you. That is a really good question. I think medication is a huge issue for a lot of people trying to figure out what to do. Some people, when there's been betrayal, end up having a problem with trauma, and that trauma response really does create a situation we call hypervigilance, which then impacts people's ability to sleep and causes a lot of sleep disturbance. I know here, and I just want to state, I am not a doctor and certainly cannot make medical recommendations. I can just tell you what some of the psychiatrists in our area have been doing for whatever that's worth. But with the sleep and kind of dealing with the depression, they've been using more like a small an SSRI, a serotonin reuptake inhibitor with Abilify, for whatever that's worth. They seem to feel that's really helped with a lot of the emotional flooding and emotional regulation and some of the sleep problems. I would certainly think getting a second opinion would be a really good idea, because I think it couldn't hurt to check with somebody else and see what they would recommend. And I just know that the sleep is probably one of the major problems that people run into, and I think part of that's caused by the hypervigilance. So if you've been dealing with this since 2009, man, that is like 3 years. I mean, bless your heart. I would just, you know, I don't know that it would still be the trauma that's creating that, but I would get a second opinion, especially with the migraines. I know that it's just got to be miserable to be going through all of that. So if what you're doing isn't working, you know, my typical thing is, if you've given it a fair shot, go test something else. Talk to someone else. Get another opinion. Keep searching until you find something that works for you. For our second question today, a little over 14 months since D-Day, and my wife is still not wanting to discuss anything even remotely related to her affair. I certainly understand my actions that helped lead to the overall deterioration of our relationship and have been actively working to change for the better, including working together with a therapist to assist in communication building. After discovering this affair, I feel as if our entire 12-plus year marriage began under false pretenses. She has admitted to never telling me the truth about her relationships prior to marriage, and even, at a minimum, emotional relationships with other men, including one of my best friends. My question, could you give some possible ways for me to handle or cope with what appears to be constant denial on her part? Also, I know this affair is one of many emotional sexual. I feel like it would really help me if she was to let the skeletons out of the closet once and for all. Do I just rely on patience and consistency on my part to get to the bottom of it all? I just often feel stuck with no information and no closure. My frustration boils over and seems to push her away and wreck any progress that we have made. It's a cycle. By the way, she's very reluctant to do anything, books, courses, seminars, etc. She feels forced to go to counseling and really only is because I would focus on my issues first, trying to give her time to feel comfortable discussing things with me. Thanks. You know, Jason, I hear you say that she's very reluctant, and part of the problem is it's easy to live in denial if you don't have any input to say that what you're doing isn't necessarily helpful. Without, and maybe you've got a really good therapist who is specializes in infidelity. But one of the messages that, you know, at least when I'm working with other therapists training them, is that letting someone like her know that it is important to be able to talk about those things. I know she's afraid maybe of your responses and what you might do, and certainly you don't want to do any more harm. But if she values the relationship at the same time, the two of you have to work through things to begin to heal. And I would hope that she'd be willing to hear maybe some other information besides what she chooses to believe, without being able to challenge what she believes to be best, or without her understanding what you actually need. I don't even know that she would know how to respond to you. I mean, obviously, I would say if she would do something like the Hope for Healing course, the EMSO course that we offer, it would be really good. The reason we set it up as we did is I know that whenever those who have been unfaithful begin to listen to other spouses, hurt spouses, in on that call, they begin to learn that it's not just them, that their mate is just like everyone else's mate, and that the path to recovery is the path to recovery, that you're not going to be unique in that process. And just having others do it oftentimes provides the courage and the impetus for somebody to try something new. And it sounds like your wife needs a different paradigm to look through this thing. Otherwise, you know, if I always love the Einstein quote, no problem can be solved by the same consciousness that created it. And she only has what she knows to work off of. And without something else, it'll be difficult, or a different sort of input, it'll probably be difficult for her to shift what she's doing. In terms of your being able to be patient, I would continue to at least press and hopefully ask that she consider doing something that would at least help y'all get unstuck one way or the other. And the nice thing, again, about the EMSO course is hopefully it's not shameful. We really believe in everyone's, that everyone deserves dignity and respect, and she certainly deserves dignity and respect, and but she could also maintain her own privacy, her own anonymity, and maybe that would help her move forward. So now for our third question, willpower. Help me to understand why willpower was not enough to keep my spouse faithful. I do not understand how sexual relationships can be categorized similar to that of drug or alcohol addictions. Well, actually, let's start with how sexual relationships. Sexual addiction is actually one of the most powerful forms of addiction. In fact, if you go to SAA meetings, oftentimes you'll find recovering drug addicts, recovering alcoholics who will say that, and cocaine addicts who will say that overcoming their addiction to the chemicals they were generating by their fantasy to be even more powerful or more difficult to overcome than what they did with their narcotics or with alcohol. And it's because what a sex addict is actually doing through thought life or through their actions is creating a really powerful compulsive habit, practically, or just like with the alcoholic, where it's mood altering. It allows them to escape and live in an altered reality, an illusion, or a fantasy. And willpower is certainly not enough. I've got many, many people who have tried to break out of sexual addiction by saying, okay, we'll stop doing it. And then they find that they're incapable of not doing it. I've got lots of hurt spouses that say, okay, I'm not going to respond this way anymore. I'm not going to be angry anymore. And willpower is not sufficient for them to control their behaviors either. It takes something very, very different. And the chemical reactions, it fits all of the basic categorizations of an addiction. It needs more and more to make the thing continue to work. There are efforts ultimately to try to cut back. It becomes less effective over time, which is what creates the more and more. I mean, it becomes more and more destructive and is not something they really want to do. Eventually it controls them. They don't control it. So I can just tell you that in terms of addiction work, it does fit all the criteria, and hopefully that will give you a little bit of help. But I know that somebody who's in that place, if they're not willing to do the work to address the addiction, the probabilities of them being able to stop the behavior, even if they really want to, are very slim. So they need to be able to get the help necessary. Something you might want to read that you might find interesting is The Power of Habit, and it will talk some about addictions and why willpower does not work in those situations. So for our next question, marriage relationship. Our marriage has never been good. I'm the pleaser and hater of confrontation. He is the minister, controller, manipulator, angry, proud man who knows nothing of discussion, compromise, or intimacy. Little by little, I've withdrawn from him in my pain and loneliness of being single, though married. Many times I've attempted to get marriage counseling, but he only rages and refuses. I have, for many reasons, chosen just to deal with it and to do my best to remain in the marriage. After 37 years, I discovered his affair. Of course, I now suspect probably one of many with church women, which he still says he didn't have. God has shown me lie after lie. I've remained in our home for the past 2 years, living separately and keeping the secret. My question is, would your couple's weekend help with such an empty, non-relationship marriage? Or even if he were suddenly willing, do we need to begin in a different place? I'm at hope for harboring hope. He's doing nothing. I'm preparing to move out alone as our house just sold. I think in a situation like this, doing an intensive weekend is probably the only way to deal with someone like that. Your problem is his, I think, his belief system is such that unless you can begin to get him to see it differently and to consider an alternate reality, it is nothing will change. He will choose to be keep his mind like concrete, all mixed up and set, especially after 37 years. And it takes something really intense to begin to shift somebody's perception like that, to begin to consider that maybe they're impacting another person, that honesty is the way they're going to have to go, that they're the problem. And working with a counselor 1 hour a week is going to be something that it would take a count years if you could keep them in therapy to slowly shift their perception and to probably even get them to be honest. The same thing can happen or largely in about 3 days. You know, it's almost like you can do 6 months of therapy in about 3 days if they'll come to the weekend. I don't know if he would be willing or not, but I can certainly tell you, I believe, as I've seen people who are very entrenched and closed channel, watching other couples, listening to them, and beginning to relate with them is about the only way you can begin to shatter that reality and get them to see something different. I certainly understand why you'd be moving apart. He is not going to be able, as long as he's in an affair, to see basically what he's doing to you, largely because somebody who's acting out like that has to blame somebody else for their behavior, and it sounds like that's what he's been doing for years as I look at your question. I do hope that something shifts for the two of you. So thank you very, very much for writing in, and I will be praying for you. So here's the next question. Fair recovery for P3 schoolers. Hi, Rick. My spouse and I are now 2.5 years from disclosure. Our son is a preschooler, and we've been discussing the impact of our fair recovery journey as it relates to our son's development in his early years. What can you tell us about how or if the instability of especially those early days of discovery and disclosure, what that has on infants and preschooler-age children in the family system? Have any studies been done in this area specifically? What are ways to repair the trauma we've created in him and also reverse the negative coping patterns we've taught him? I'll tell you, one of the huge ways to help kids out and preschoolers is certainly changing the pattern and putting things right. When you begin to have good interactions, when you begin to model positive things in the relationship, that's where those, a lot of that damage actually begins to heal. That's where things get better for them. It's not so much a matter of going back, change what was back there, but you certainly can change what you're doing now. And as they say, loving your mate, having a strong marriage, being attentive to him, those are the things in the long run that are going to help him, I think, with his development, begin to change things for the better for your preschooler. And, you know, in terms of reversing those negative coping patterns, I think sometimes parents may feel bad and allow kids to get away with things simply because they feel guilty for what they ultimately modeled for their child. I would say that maintaining really good boundaries for your child and having a loving home with good structure is going to be the best thing. So those things, you know, they will recover. Kids are fairly resilient. I think sometimes we even take far too much responsibility for how they turn out. They have their own choices, but at least you can show them how you've corrected mistakes you've made. You can provide a loving place for them where they can heal, which is ultimately what they need. It's another question. Rick, Have you done studies on what or what are your professional experiences in comparing the recovery of young couples with small children to that of older couples with older children? Is it more challenging for younger couples to recover and save their marriage because recovery is compounded by the stress of younger children, new parents, and or also the emotionalism that seems more prevalent in younger couples? Generally speaking, are couples in their 40s and up more grounded, mature, and not so excitable compared to those in their 20s and 30s? Actually, I would say this is just my observations. I haven't done research, but I would say it's the other way around. Maybe couples in their 20s and 30s that have children, while they may be more excitable, I think that maybe there's still a little more resilience. What you begin to bump into in the 40s are midlife crises and older children who are getting ready to leave home. And at that point, at least for the younger couples, sometimes people will say, and I don't think this is necessarily a great idea, that they're going to work on their marriage for the sake of their children, and they're more likely probably to stop and consider what the long-term impact will be on the kids. When you've got an older couple with older kids, I think that they mistakenly believe that maybe the kids won't be impacted as much. In reality, the kids are just as impacted regardless of, I think, the age. It's very, very difficult for them. And also, at whatever the age, sets them up potentially for problems in their own marriages in the future. But my observation would probably be that couples in their 40s probably have developed more bad habits. And while they may not, well, they certainly can be as, they may be more rigid, which in turn, I think, creates probably a little more difficulty in helping them stay together. Now, that being said, without children, the younger or the earlier in a relationship that infidelity occurs, there's some research that does show that there is a lower chance of survival just because they haven't become as established as a unit. So that would be the only other thing I would say that might be a factor in those situations. Here's the next question. Recovery for my spouse. High school sweetheart, husband of 11 years, just found out about a past affair. How can I help him with the recovery process? He's not really willing to look at or participate yet in online marriage counseling. Am I pushing too hard? How long should I wait? I've been to a psychiatrist and therapist and in group meetings with women in similar circumstances. He's angry and hurt and in shock. We have a 3.5-year-old son. I want our marriage to work. I need quality time from him. I need levels of intimacy that he hasn't provided. We need help. How can I stress the importance of counsel? You know, I don't know how far back your affair went. I can tell you that even if it was at the very beginning of the marriage and it's been 11 years, it's just yesterday to him. And I don't know, you know, how long you've been kind of pushing. I think if you'd be willing to maybe do at least a little reading, maybe that would be helpful. I would suggest maybe calling, writing info@affairrecovery.com and talking to Tony. Maybe, I don't know if he'd be willing to talk with Tony. I'm sure that he's hurt and in shock. But any type of thing that he can read that would kind of normalize the situation for him, I would suggest that you try to be patient. It's interesting. I had somebody text me just today who has been, I've been waiting since September for them to contact us because he's been too angry and doesn't know how to move beyond it. And he finally has reached out for help, which I'm very, very grateful for. But, you know, it's been almost 3 months. And, well, let's see, beginning of September, yeah, first week of September, September, October, we're now in November. So it's been 2 months that he's had someone that he could call, and he finally reached out. So I certainly think patience is good if possible. And if he'll read something, one thing that you can do is let him know on a regular basis that you certainly appreciate the fact that he's still there, and just let him know you know this is incredibly difficult and that you'll continue doing whatever you need to do to stay safe and keep moving forward. You can ask him, too, if he would like to talk with somebody who's maybe been in a similar situation, and by writing info@hope-now, we could potentially find another man in a similar situation who'd be willing to talk to him if that would be helpful. I can actually think of one right now that is probably in a very similar place. So be patient, and I do hope that'll help, and maybe he can find someone that he can talk to, which would be, I think, it doesn't solve the problem. He's still going to hurt, but potentially it lets him see that there's hope. And right now he probably doesn't know how to find hope in this situation. So please be patient. Keep telling him you appreciate everything he's doing and the fact that he's still there. So for our final question today, how do you respond when an affair partner looks up online and makes contact with their AP? My spouse just informed me and showed me the message that his AP has made contact. The message is strange because she makes a comment that she'll see us/him next August, which means she's heard we will be in town. It's really irritating that as a hurt spouse, I feel like I have to deal with her trying her old tactics to stir up a relationship with my husband again. The flooding is not bad, but it does put some doubts back in my mind whether or not she will ever be out of our lives, and if my husband regrets that he stayed with me instead of leaving for her. The spinning sucks, even if not like it was early on in recovery. What are the expectations I should have on my unfaithful spouse in terms of supporting me right now? He is not and has no intentions of replying to her. Her YouTube post, we have an account so many remote families can watch videos of our son. Wow. You know, one of the things that I always say, and the problem with infidelity in particular, is it's when you forgive infidelity and you choose to reconcile, you're choosing to accept all the blooming consequences of the other person's actions. You know, it's almost like there's so many ongoing things that you have to deal with, such as what you just mentioned here. And you know, a no response is probably the best response. My personal opinion, if you reinforce even negatively somebody when they're making that sort of response, at one level it gives them power. A no response makes them sit there and go, wonder if it even got through, what happened. And over time, they just begin to figure, you know, nobody's going to play ball with them. And all they're doing, I call it fishing. You know, they're casting a lure out there in the middle of the lake and slowly reeling that lure in, hoping that somebody will come up and hit the bait. And the last thing you want to do is allow them any sort of gratification for, I guess, their behavior continuing to do this. When you ask the question, and I can understand why you wonder if your husband regrets that he stayed with you instead of leaving for her, but it sounds like he's still working with you, trying to figure out what to do with her. And I love the fact that he has no intention of replying, which says to me that he's with you. In terms of how he supports you right now, you know, all he can do is just listen to you and hopefully, you know, just keep assuring you that he's, you know, where he wants to be. You're the one, you know, whenever this sort of thing comes in, however, when it comes to forgiveness, you're the one in the position that has, you can either rail against this, get mad about it, push against it, say this isn't fair, I can't believe we're never going to get over it, or, you know, you can do probably what you've had to do time and time again, which is just, what's that saying, cry a river to build a bridge to get over it. I mean, it's just try to come to a place of acceptance and say, this is what it is. It's not what I signed up for, but there really are good things about this relationship, and I'm grateful that we've worked through this. And I'm glad that we're still together and that we're growing. And begin to focus on what's positive, but you've got to come to an acceptance. She may be out there for a while, but eventually it will fade. And to your question at the very beginning, how do you respond when an affair partner makes contact with their AP? You don't. You leave it alone, and the two of you pull together, and hopefully you'll sit there and just finally just say, okay, I hate this, but I'm going to face it, and together we're going to walk through it, and we'll be stronger because of it. So that is our final question for the day. I certainly want to thank everybody for joining the call, and I love it when we get this many questions. Please be sure to start posting questions already for next week, and I look forward to talking to everybody next Monday. Be healing.